Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Brian Newbert. I'm Alan Carver from goldenblack.com. I think you can read that over the side, figure out who we are, if you know who Brian Newbert is, to say the least. You want to thank...
What does that mean?
Well, to say the least, or to say a lot. We're off to a great start here.
You make it sound like I'm a person of infamy.
You are. But that person in for me also likes to talk about the Union Club Hotel. We appreciate their sponsorship of Saturday Simulcast and Brian's rap videos. And Vicki Wicks and company have been a great supporter of us for all these years. And a reminder, too, you can click at the very bottom. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can subscribe. There's a special deal for YouTube viewers. We'd like you, as Brian always says at the end of his rap videos, if you make it all the way through this, you ought to be a subscriber to our site. So
you are just degenerate enough to be right up our alley.
That is correct. And there is a special two months for $1 offer for YouTube folks. Of course, there's annual subscriptions as well. Information on how to do that, in addition to all of our products at goldenblack.com. Brian, it is May. You've been hot on the trail the last couple of weekends in Indianapolis, and then a little road trip to Hoover, Alabama, Birmingham. Was it Birmingham to Hoover, or were you only in Hoover?
I was. Well, you have to go through Birmingham to get Hoover. So yeah. I guess I stayed in Birmingham, but all the games were in Hoover, and I'm told the Hooverians aren't crazy about being referred to as Birmingham. So I've been careful to say I was in Hoover. I don't want any of the Hooverians to get mad at me. Hoover's a very nice place. Birmingham's a very nice place too. I was in
Hoover. It's interesting because Hoover's where they have the SEC media days too, right? I mean,
there were actually SEC logos on the exit off of the interstate I was taking in and out to get from my hotel in Birmingham to Hoover. So it's obviously there to indicate that that's where the SEC gets together to have their media day. They had their meetings in the off season in Destin. So, their media days are, in the Birmingham area, Hoover. I don't know where. I don't know what hotel or facility or whatever. Maybe the Chick-fil-A there. I have no idea. But some really nice athletic facilities there in Hoover and just a nice place.
All right. Well, you looked at obviously Purdue only has one scholarship in 2025, and you looked at 2026. It's so amazing to me that we're even talking about that. I say this every time. I'll first ask you about Trent Sicily, just in terms, you said chance to see him over the last couple of weekends. You've seen him a lot over a period of time. An interesting dynamic because Purdue does have one scholarship in that class. And Sicily is a very talented, highly, a guy that certainly seems to fit into what Matt Painter and company want to do. But there may be more dynamics to that down the road. Give us what you see in him, but also some of the thought processes Purdue may recruit this person sooner than later. Though, as you've said, it is a process to when he makes his final decision.
Yeah, the one perception of this I've been trying to head off here is like, Trent Sicily is the one guy that has an offer right now for that one scholarship class. He's the one guy Purdue's recruited for a very long time. I don't want people to conflate that with it being a Trent Sicily or bust sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think Sicily's a good player. I think he's a high floor player. I think he's the sort of player that Purdue has won with. And I think it's very important at this stage in Purdue basketball history for Purdue to not deviate from what got it to where it just got, just because it got to that place, it doesn't need to go changing and trying to go get a different type of player. It needs to do the exact opposite. It needs to keep doing what it's been doing. And Trent Sicily is what Purdue's been doing. He's that kind of steady, really solid, fundamentally sound kind of player with a pretty solid skill set for what will be a stretch four man in college. He's got some perimeter skill to him. He's got some interior ability. He plays hard. He's smart. He's a good, functional piece in structure. He's got a good basketball mind, that kind of thing. That is what got Purdue where Purdue is right now. And you don't ever stop prioritizing those players. With that being said, I think that, you know, you're in a position here where this 2025 player is projected to walk onto a team, not walk on as in not being on scholarship, but join a team that is going to presumably have Braden Smith, Fletcher Loyer, and Trey Kaufman-Wren as seniors, Camden Heidi and Miles Colvin as juniors, and a whole bunch of experience in the six-man freshman class that gets here in like a month. That could be a Final Four type of team. And when you look at what happened this last season, Lance Jones was that final piece of the puzzle. And the puzzle doesn't come together the way it did without Lance Jones. So viewing that scholarship as kind of a last piece of the puzzle sort of possibility is probably the best way to go about this. You know, who knows if Purdue ends up with only that one scholarship, but I think Purdue would be wise to, you know, not narrow itself, not box itself in on any one player, you know, here or there. That's why I don't want people to think this is Trent Sicily or you don't sign a recruiting class.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the transfer portal is what it is. Matt Painter doesn't want to do anything more than supplement that way. I think making the Lance Jones comparison is dangerous because Lance Jones worked out as well as possibly could have been expected.
Absolutely.
That is not something you can bank on. That is not something that is going to necessarily replicate itself on an every year basis. You're in the portal. So just assuming that if you can add a transfer to that 2025 team, assuming you can go get Lance Jones again, would be a very dangerous assumption to make. So I think that, you know, for the time being, it is Trent Sicily. If he wants to commit, you take him in a heartbeat. If this draws out a little bit more, which there's every reason to think it probably will go into the fall, you know, Purdue would be wise to give itself some options here. I'm sure that that's in, on its mind. I do think Purdue's in a great spot with Sicily. I do always worry about, you know, when push comes to shove on a Southern Indiana kid, can he say yes to Purdue in conjunction with saying no to Indiana? I don't have any real reason to believe that is a deal-breaking issue, but it is always something to keep in mind. Notre Dame and Michigan State are very much in this too. So it's not just an either-or type of situation with Purdue and Indiana, but, you know, Purdue's invested a lot of time. Matt Painter has been to Santa Claus, Indiana, 9 or 10 times or something like that to see Sicily over a span of many years. So I think this is a situation where Purdue's put a ton of time in, a ton of investment in, and they're obviously not going to walk away anytime soon. It's just a matter of what ends up happening and when it ends up happening.
Yeah. Was it Cole Seafrig and John Goldsberry from Santa Claus, Indiana? I can't remember who the one.
They both went to Heritage Hills too.
Pardon me?
They both went to Heritage Hills also. That's where Francisco goes to school.
We like to digress as much as possible. But you look at who you saw in terms of class of 26, and you've written about it pretty extensively on the site and encourage folks to take that dollar and become a member or think about that as well. But you, what did you see in the 26 class? And what, you know, as you start to develop that, what is Purdue looking for? What will be the makeup of that class in terms of numbers? And I know that's kind of a nebulous term right now, but what are some things that people need to watch for as Purdue starts to look at that class?
Well, that's the class that'll come in after Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer depart. So I think that obviously getting your next backcourt is your priority. Now you got guys coming in this year, CJ Cox, Jakari Harris, Jack Benner. So assuming that the next guys you sign in 2025 have to come in and do that year what Fletcher Loyer and Braden Smith did last year, that's not necessarily a great way to frame this either, because there will be other guards on the team. But I think it's important that you go get your next point guard. You know, CJ Cox and Jakari Harris can be that guy probably. But I think, you know, Braden Smith is really taking Purdue in a bit of a direction offensively here, where that true point guard, those true point guard qualities have really kind of come to the forefront. And not that they weren't important before, it's just Purdue hasn't had that sort of guy. And Purdue is, you know, obviously looking at a lot of guards. Talen Kinney from the Cincinnati area is an early priority and an excellent player, just an excellent player. Big physical, kind of scoring-minded point guard who can shoot, get to the basket, use his body and length really well, has a good first step, a tough kid, a competitor, has a great energy to him, just a no-brainer type of guy. So I think that's where things kind of start. But where things start and where things finish are often very different. There's going to be a long process involved here, and a bunch of guys are going to end up getting recruited. There's a player who plays with Sicily, Luke Ertl, from Mount Vernon, who is kind of oozes Purdue. He's a tough player. He can shoot. He's got some competitiveness to him. Former football player who just has a lot of winning qualities to him. I think Purdue's going to end up looking at him pretty hard. But that's just a starting point. Those are just two guys I saw this weekend. That's not the board, so to speak. The board isn't going to be assembled until like next summer. So this is just like the first inning of a 9-inning game here. Purdue has done a great job in recent years getting its guys and getting them early. Whether or not there's any possibilities in that sense there, I have no idea in this class. But that's what Purdue's track record has been. I don't see any possibilities here. It's not to say there won't be for Purdue to get any early commitments in this class, but you don't argue with history. It happens every year, right? Purdue's got all its class in place easily by the fall, normally. This year was a little bit of an outlier because Daniel Jacobson jumped in the fall, but he reclassified. So that was sort of the you'd say delay there. Jakari Harris was basically already committed by the time he actually announced. CJ Cox was a late addition to the class by Purdue standards. He committed in like October or something like that. I think, you know, part of that had to do with the fact they just liked him better than Travis Perry, but also I think they were just not wanting to wait on Travis Perry much longer. So you know, there were some circumstances with those guys, but a few of the guys in that class were obviously already committed going into the fall. And that's been kind of the norm for Purdue, which has been a huge advantage for them because when their classes are wrapped up early, right, they can get early starts on the next class. So wrap up one class early, get an early start on the next class, you have a better chance of wrapping that next class up early, and the whole cycle continues. But they're going to have to really work at this class because there's going to be a lot of scholarships and a lot of needs. A lot of scholarships in the sense that there's at least three. Yeah. And, you know, three has a funny way of finding its way to five quite a bit. Who knows how it's going to end up, but it is going to be a higher numbers class, and it's going to be an important class given who you lose coming out of that year.
Yeah, you've had a chance to talk to Matt Painter. He'll have more stuff on the site this week from that discussion. You look at where Purdue is and all the discussion about, you know, continuing to do things the way Purdue's done them, and you've been pretty straightforward over that's an important way to do things and the right way to do things. And yet that isn't the way it's being done around the country in terms of even UConn. UConn had some homegrown players, obviously, but it had two or three guys that were huge, huge contributors to what the Huskies had to win the national championship this year. This is sustainable in your view from the way Matt Painter and company continues to do it because of the way that this program has, the foundation is built. You look at it down the road, this is certainly the way it seems to make a lot of sense for Purdue.
Well, first off, I don't think there's a right way. I don't think there's a wrong way. I think there's just two very different ways. And I don't think we have enough data yet on which one it tends to be more effective. When you look at the Final Four this year, you know, yes, Purdue built its team from the ground up. UConn put the best team in college basketball together with a bunch of foundational guys who came up through their ranks. Yes, there were transfers, Tristan Newton, but he was a multi-year transfer. I think that's a little different. Sure. Cam Spencer obviously made a huge difference for them. But then you look at the other two teams that made the Final Four, NC State and Alabama were transfer havens, right? Yeah. So I don't think there's really any right way or wrong way yet. When you look at the Big Ten, you know, Purdue has been dominating this league, you know, ever since the portal and NIL came to the forefront. And when you look at Indiana and Illinois, two of the teams that are doing it the other way, the polar opposite way, you know, Purdue's been better than those teams. Now, Illinois was great this year. They had a great team this year. So the difference there between Purdue and Illinois is, you know, two head-to-head matchups, right? Basically, and one more game. Purdue won the league by three games. So it's not like these teams that are doing it the other way are just blowing up like would seem like the occupational hazard in doing it that way. Yeah. Now, you go back to Illinois the year before when they take Matthew Mayer, who was a little bit of a flake, for lack of a better term. I think that really hurt them. And that's kind of where things, why I'm talking so much about Illinois right now, I have no idea. They're,
no, but it's an example of how,
after a long PTSD inducing year with their fans.
Yeah.
No, I think that, you know, Purdue's going to keep trying to do it its way, in terms of building through the high school ranks, developing players, keeping them together, over a long period of time. And that's what's worked here recently. Stands to reason to suggest that can be handled, that can work long term, provided Matt Painter keeps doing a great job evaluating these guys on the front end and Purdue's retention rates stay where they are and Purdue stays free of injuries and things like that. I think that kind of has gotten lost in all this too, is how healthy Purdue has been. Purdue probably deserved that after its history prior to these last 2 years, but we don't get what we deserve sometimes. But I think that in some way, shape, or form, it'll catch up with both ways at some point. Purdue will run into a year where somebody will transfer, somebody will get hurt, something unexpected will happen, somebody will go take more money from somebody else, and these transfer haven schools are going to issue more or provide more cautionary tales and be complete train wrecks here. And remember, NC State made the Final Four. Up until that point, they were a complete train wreck. They were bad until they just got hot at the right time. But I'm sure you could go through a lot of examples of teams that put together a lot of transfers and just didn't work. Like up until the last few years, a 19-win team, that would have been relative success at a lot of places. Indiana wins 19 games last year, whatever the final number was, and their season is an abject disaster because of the expectations there, because of all the money they spent on those players. You know, all the money they've spent on their roster this year. You have to look at that as there's got to be a number on that now. What's your outcome this year that justifies spending $4 million on a college basketball team? But I'm kind of digressing here again. I just think both ways can work. Which one would work better? I don't think we have any way to say that. I do know Painter's going to do it his way, and Purdue's got its NIL situation set up to where everybody gets taken care of. I don't think that there's really an urgent need for a lot of guys to be running away from Purdue. I think there's opportunities for guys like Zach Edey and Braden Smith to supplement what they make anyway at Purdue with what they've earned. I don't think Purdue just handed Zach Edey $1 million last year or however much it was he made. He got that on the back of being the best player in college basketball, which is what NIL was always supposed to be. It was supposed to be what you earned, not just what some easy mark of a collective was willing to give you just to get you to go there. So Purdue seems like it has played both sides of the fence here pretty well. That might be a poor choice of terms here. I think they've got a pretty good situation for their guys for the guys they tend to target, the guys they're very selective in bringing into their program. I think that's why they've been so stable here the last couple of years. I think it's really been a front end issue. I think he's done a really good job just getting the right guys and treating them well and breeding loyalty from those guys and getting them to kind of buy into something bigger than themselves. And, you know, there are guys on this roster who could have made a lot of money somewhere else. But they probably have understood that somewhere else, you know, wouldn't have been as good a personal or basketball situation for them. So, as I said, I think it's been great work on the front end by Purdue in recruiting and getting to know the players they recruit. And, you know, the personality test looms large, right? I think Purdue's just done a really good job getting the right guys. And now it's just a matter of continuing to find those guys for as long as those guys exist. Those sorts of guys may not exist forever. You might have to look really hard sometimes to find them. But I always go back to Michigan State. Like, the sorts of players that made Michigan State what Michigan State is, do they exist anymore? I don't see typical Michigan State teams here. Why I'm talking about every other team in the Big Ten more, I'm talking about Purdue.
But it dies into how Purdue
I don't know.
Navigates the future without question.
It's kind of a cautionary tale sort of thing, me bringing up these other schools. But, you know, the other part of this, too, is, you know, some of the broad changes that may, again, becoming a college basketball, college football, whatever, might change all this again in like 2 years. We're clearly on our way to revenue sharing, however that's going to look, of which NIL, I'm sure, will still be a piece of that, a big piece of that. But is it going to be a situation where NIL is the recruiting inducement anymore? What is revenue sharing and de facto salary going to mean for transfers? Is the transfer portal going to remain open the way it is right now, the unlimited, you know, option for player movement, or is there going to be some sort of, I don't see how you can dictate where a person goes to college by contract, at least anymore. I know that was sort of the way it was done before. But the way this has gone, I just don't know if binding contracts are going to be part of this whole new world order that's clearly coming. So us talking all about whether Purdue's way is the best way, whether Illinois' way is the best way, it might be a whole different world here in 2 years. So this might be just a temporary kind of footnote that somebody can write like a term paper about one day when they're studying the history of college sports.
Yeah, it is confusing. It is multifaceted, and where it all is going to end is, or where we'll all land is going to be interesting. I hope they're still interested in it. That concerns me from time to time too, just making sure there's going to be interest in pretty basketball, but making sure that all this other talk keeps everybody fired up.
Well, I don't think TV networks would be paying $1 billion for a TV product that people were losing interest in because the players were making money.
Yeah.
I think that was a grandstanding issue by the people who were opposed to NIL that, oh, people are going to lose interest.
And that's clearly not true.
I think
true.
It hurts things locally a little bit, probably in certain places where the roster's turning over every year, where I think, you know, you tended to build kind of a bond with the school, with the community, with the players as they came up, and you sort of watch them grow up into young men and young women, and that's compromised now. But you know what people like more than anything? Winning.
Winning.
So I think that, and football.
Yeah.
America has an unbreakable addiction to football, as we know. And if the TV numbers were declining, or if interest was declining, the TV numbers would be declining. And if the TV numbers were declining, TV networks wouldn't be throwing more and more money every year at college athletics and thus dictating everything about college athletics.
Yeah, and it's true. The numbers have not declined, and they've shown no sign. Even the bowl games, which are complete sham for a lot of them last year, numbers were up. So it is an interesting dynamic that the younger set also doesn't bother them one bit. They want to win. They want interesting teams on the field, and that's certainly has been the process to date. All right, a couple other news and notes on the basketball front. Schedule is being put together for Matt Painter and company. You reported about a couple of weeks ago about the whole fact that it looks like the Arizona game in Phoenix not going to happen. Purdue may find another opponent from the Southeast Conference, sounds like sounding up. But any other scheduling notes without divulging everything that's on our site? But that non-conference schedule seems to be starting to come together as it always does this time of year.
Yeah, Purdue was supposed to play Arizona in Vegas, and then it was bound to move to Phoenix.
Right.
That's off. That's on Arizona. They just couldn't make it work, I guess, for whatever reason. Obviously, they're transitioning to the Big 12. There's probably some complication there. Their school is in financial strife.
Yes, big time.
They lost a lot of their roster. So that's off. So Purdue will presumably end up not returning that Indy Classic game from last year. Purdue's going to play Auburn in Birmingham. I have learned contract is not necessarily finalized yet, but we're moving in that direction, as they say, when they have to, launder the reality of it. Otherwise,
Milwaukee to play Marquette, right? Is that
they've got the home and home set up with Marquette. They go to Marquette this year. John Rothstein, our everybody's favorite schedule leak recipient, reported today that Purdue and Alabama, or Friday, Purdue and Alabama are setting up a home and home here, where Alabama will come to Purdue this year. And then Purdue will go to Tuscaloosa the year after that. I can't confirm that, but I don't doubt it. So Purdue will have Auburn in Birmingham. I don't know if that's a situation where Auburn then comes to the Indy Classic the year after that, or something like that. But so it'll be Marquette on the road. It'll be Alabama at home. It'll be Texas A&M and Indy. Right. As kind of your big three high major games. You go out to the San Diego tournament. I'm guessing Purdue probably gets BYU in the first round of that. And then Arkansas and Notre Dame would be the other side of it. And then so that would be, if you count BYU as a high major, which they are now,
yeah,
because they're in the
Big 12. Right?
Big 12. So that you're looking at that as your four or five high major games known as of now. As of now, there could always be something else that comes out, but that's what we know right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenging non-conference schedule, maybe not quite to the level that it's been the last couple of years, but not far behind if you look at that, look at those teams that are on the docket. Okay, last question before we wrap this up, just on who's coming back. Caleb, first, I know Matt Painter said when his visit this week to Fort Wayne, talked what you would expect him to do, talk glowingly about maybe Caleb first being a key contributor this year. It'll be interesting to see how that all comes to bear. But talk about just the ones that are coming back and some of the ones you wrote this week about the ones that need to make the biggest step up. I mean, Trey Coffin-Wren made a big step last year and has shown that he's going to be a standout player in the Big Ten. But what do you see from that? And what are some of the things that you'll be watching for in the early part of the 24-25 season to see if Purdue can be a team that can be competitive? It will be competitive in the Big Ten, but a team that could be competitive nationally as well.
Yeah. Well, first off, some context. When you go up to a city to have a to speak, and the local guy is there with a TV camera to ask you all about the player from that city who is on your team, you kind of have to be like super positive.
No doubt.
I think Caleb first obviously is at a bit of a crossroads, is a is a poor term. This is his first big opportunity at Purdue to be like a really relied upon guy, like a foundational sort of guy. But I mean, he finished the season outside the rotation, and I think he's got to have a big summer in order to take care of that or to take advantage of that opportunity. Whether that's in his wiring or not, obviously remains to be seen. Purdue's got some other guys who are going to be vying for minutes there. I think Trey Kaufman-Moran is going to be Purdue's starting center. And I think when I say center, I mean like he's going, that's the position he's going to play. Not like he's going to be Zach Edey or AJ Hammonds or Isaac Hollis or anything like that. He's going to be their starting center. And then after that, it's Will Berg, Caleb First, Daniel Jacobson, maybe Riley Burgess as kind of a combo guy. Competing for that backup job. And then if you think you need a third center, or you could always have a flex guy, a 4-5. That's kind of what the fray looks like there. But I think, you know, one of the stories of the season obviously is going to be, you know, Trey Kaufman-Moran kind of sliding into that go-to post score role, which is I keep saying it. It's like being Steve Spurrier's quarterback in the 90s. It's like you slide into that role and you get numbers. That's just how it works. But it's gonna put a real onus on his decision making. If he's effective enough as a scorer to command being defended a certain way, he's gonna have to make a real step as a passer. I think the way Zach Edey did around the same time in his career. It's going to put a lot of pressure on him defensively. His foul shooting obviously is going to hold back his numbers until that takes a step up. And he did do pretty well at times through the course of the year. I think his 3-point shooting is something that if he gets that to a place where it's pretty consistent and something that Purdue wants him looking for, that could really add a dynamic to this offense that could make it very different than what it's been before. But the days of, you know, Purdue playing ultimate size and playing through that ultimate size, you know, for the time being, are at least on hiatus. I think this is, you know, Braden Smith's team first, Fletcher Lawyer second, and then Trey Kaufman-Moran is your front court scoring element. And then you get a little more athletic around him. I think Camden Heidi is probably your starting four, not a traditional four. And then Miles Colvin's your three. So you're going to have a lot more perimeter skill, a lot more interchangeability. That's a story I'm going to write this week that I think will be something that is really pertinent going into the next season. You have a lot of guys who can just play a couple different positions, just trade places at a whim, really switch screens, really make you play four out sometimes. I think that, you know, Trey Kaufman-Moran is the guy I kind of ID'd as the guy who has to make the biggest jump this offseason, with the qualifier that I think he made that jump last season. But now it's a little bit different because the responsibility level is different. The other guy is obviously Miles Coleman. I think Purdue loves his work ethic. I think they like his potential, love his potential. I think he's a guy who becomes a more featured player. His minutes go through the roof. He's trending well. I think he, you know, is a guy who came from a kind of a raw basketball background prior to Purdue. I think he defended and rebounded well enough late in the year to get trusted enough to get put on the floor in some pretty big games. That was not the case all season. So seeing him improve through the course of the year instead of, you know, doing the opposite, whereas a guy who's used to being the star on every team he's ever played on, that can go a couple different ways. And it seemed to go in a really positive direction for him. I just remember after the UConn game, he was mad. He was legitimately upset about having lost that game. And so too was everybody else. But to see that from Miles Coleman, who really, to be brutally honest with you, before he came to Purdue, probably didn't play in a whole lot of games where winning and losing mattered all that much. He played in a couple sectionals, won a couple sectionals, things like that, but he never played at like a high-end championship level, either in high school or grassroots, anything like that. I thought that was a good sign for his development, his maturation as a basketball player. I think he's got a chance to be really good at Purdue, and I think he's got a chance to be A real breakout guy this year for Purdue. I think Trey Kaufman-Wren is your guy in the Big Ten who might be the breakout player of the year. That said, I can't name a player on a lot of teams, so a returning player, I should say. But I think it's a big offseason for Miles Colvin too, obviously, and I think he's entering it on an upward trajectory.
Well said. All right. We will put an end to this. There'll be more to talk about throughout the spring, late spring and summer, and look for Brian's work, obviously, on the site over the coming weeks as he looks ahead to 24-25, which will be a really interesting year for Purdue basketball on a number of different fronts. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel and the Boiler Up Bar, Leaps Coffee, 811 Bistro. We appreciate all that goes on there. Big weekend there with graduation Saturday and Sunday. They even had a Friday ceremonies as well as Purdue is chock full of students graduating this weekend, and the big going on at the Union Club Hotel. Also a reminder to become a member of goldenblack.com. You can click on some information at the bottom of this. If you're watching this on YouTube, we highly recommend, if you've made it, as Brian always says, if you've made it to the end here, of all the brilliance that Brian has thrown on the table here, it's time for you to become a member. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks so much for watching and listening. And we'll see you down the road with our next Saturday simulcast.